Welcome to part two of this podcast from the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries. I'm Sonia Sequeira. The Financial Systems Thinking Innovation Centre, or FinSTIC, is a community of IFRA members and non-members dedicated to bringing the benefits of a systems thinking lens to their work. Although a number of pioneering actuaries have been working on problems with systems thinking techniques, it is still early days for the actuarial profession in this field. Systems approaches have only recently been gaining traction in academic circles outside the faculties that originated them. I'm talking to Ashok Gupta, FinSTIC Chair, and FinSTIC member Nico Aspinall. Ashok, I want to start with you. What are some of the actuarial problems that could be solved by systems thinking, and when should they be used?
Sonia, let me answer that by giving you three practical illustrations of where systems thinking has been applied. The first is in risk management. Neil Cantle of Milliman and Chika Agadino of Aviva have been using systems thinking to drive a systems thinking approach to risk management right throughout Aviva. And in doing so, that's given them insights into new and emerging risks, which they wouldn't have got if they hadn't used a systems thinking approach. There's another great piece of work done by Professor Darren Farmer of the Institute for New Economic Thinking, where he's been applying agent-based modeling to understand the interaction between agents and principals in the property casualty world and the extent to which risk models and the use of regulatory risk models like Solvency II have been changing the tendency to default pricing and effectively the efficiency of the catastrophe aspects of the property casualty world. And they find that Solvency II, for example, and other similar regulatory-based systems have resulted in a reduction in heterogeneity of risk models, which has the potential to lead to, amongst other things, higher premiums and greater defaults. I personally used systems thinking in a review of the defined benefit pension system, where I was asked to head a task force looking at this, and we found that there had been excessive rent extraction by agents in the defined benefit pension sector, that the interests of agents and principals had become misaligned, and that certain risks had been ignored, which had not been ignored, but not given sufficient attention, which I don't think we'd have spotted if we hadn't used a systems lens.
Yeah, and from my perspective, I look to the future around concepts like sustainability. You know, at the moment, we would understand a business sort of without understanding its scale. So there's nothing that we as individuals can do which is unsustainable because we're just one little animal on a big planet. But when you multiply it by 7 or 8 billion, there's almost nothing that we can do which is sustainable. So when we try and understand the sustainability of a company, which is definitely going to be a topic on everyone's radars, you know, as we look forward, you know, you have to have some sort of an understanding of the scale of that company and their role within the bigger system. So when I think about diversifying investment portfolios, well, that diversification assumes a certain amount of scale, or should assume a certain amount of scale, which is currently kind of absent from the maths. And then concepts like resilience. So thinking about, you know, if all of those investments rise and fall in the same kind of economic cycle, then they might look diverse, but they may not behave in a diverse way. So there are various kind of pieces of that this lens can add to us understanding, you know, sustainability, redundancy, stability. Those are all kind of systems concepts.
What you describe was very apparent during the global financial crisis and in the piece of work I did looking at pro-cyclicality in the financial services sector. And what we found is that the insurance companies and, to a lesser degree, pension funds had behaved in a pro-cyclical way during the credit crunch. And so they were selling assets as markets are falling, and that actually worsened their financial position, leading them to need to sell more assets and contributing to a decline of markets and asset bubbles at a time when they should have been behaving in a counter-cyclical way. And so they were leading to a massive directions, which were driven by a combination of regulation, accounting, and industry practices, were leading to a reduction in system resilience.
Yeah, it's a sort of classic poverty trap that essentially I can't afford to take actions which will make me richer, but the actions I can afford to take will make me poorer.
Yeah.
Ashok, how could we embed systems thinking into the actuarial profession?
I think this is about mindset, mostly about mindset. What we want to do is help actuaries, and not just actuaries, non-actuaries, to do their jobs better. And we believe that systems thinking can be helpful in this. And the way we want to do it is through making people aware of case studies, practical examples, where systems thinking have brought insights, brought better solutions, brought answers. And by making people aware of that, encourage them to think, give them ideas and help them to understand where they might get a better mousetrap by applying systems thinking.
Nico, is there a resistance to new ways of thinking? And if yes, how does the profession overcome that?
So I think it's fair to say there's always resistance. You know, actuaries are not unique. New ways of thinking are by very definition a challenge. So I think it's natural that people who have operated within a certain mindset for a period of 20 or 30 years, who have staked their professional reputation on a particular model or you know, the implications of that for the actions of their clients, would almost run the risk of perceiving this as a challenge which might bring professional liability, that they've been wrong doing that particular mindset and that model in the past. The world has changed over that period of time, both in terms of the scale of the human economy. We know that we're doubling our GDP every sort of 15 years or so in terms of the global impacts. When we've put, I mean, in my lifetime, 3 billion people onto the planet. You know, these are numbers just beyond recognition in terms of the belief that we can have a sort of linear set of models which will work for all time. So actually, you're going to be a better advisor if you kind of incorporate new thinking. We don't expect doctors to operate the same way as they did from the 1970s. It is right for a profession to renew itself. And, you know, it is to the benefit of these advisors to kind of bring in these new ways of thought.
A lot of the resistance, Sonia, will come from the commercial vested interests. I mentioned in the pension study that I carried out that we found excessive rent extraction. Now, that obviously, when we produced our results, we got a lot of pushback from the organizations that were doing very well, in agents, organizations acting as agents, who were making a very healthy living through providing services, but in our view, extracting excessive rent. So initially, there was a lot of pushback, but what we did find was that the actuaries were amongst the quickest to say, hold on, there's something in this study that we need to think about, and there's an exposure for us as professionals if we don't think about it. So these things do change quite fast.
Nico, is the way actuaries have been modelling problems too narrow?
So I think one of the first things we learn as actuaries is that all models are wrong. Right. And I think the process of modelling is always narrow. So there's a simplification of the world that we carry out when we create a model. And I guess really the question is, have we forgotten that? So have we lost sight of that simplification? I would sort of come at the problem of saying, well, you know, what are the consequences of that? If I sit with a client and I pretend that there's only one right model, then my client understands the one answer of it as being the right answer. Whereas we have actuaries, of course, understand that that's probably a single figure is almost certainly the only number which is 100% wrong. So if you come to a client with two models, you're actually bringing a thought process into your advisory context to say to the client, hey, which are the right models? Some are going to have the right or better answers for different kind of stakeholder questions. What are the right assumptions to underline that? And by the nature of having two answers, I'm going to range something much better. So it's not so much that the models are too narrow. It's that we need to remember that all models are wrong, and we need to kind of have a context of advice which is just a bit more interactive than I think a kind of single unitary model and a single answer kind of suggests.
And I think that's particularly true, Nico, in looking at your assumptions, because quite often we tend to assume that our assumptions behave in a linear way, whereas increasingly with changes in society resulting from digitalization, localization, robotics, AI, et cetera, we should expect greater discontinuities. We should expect that some of the things that have behaved in a linear way in the past will not necessarily behave in that way. If I take the issue of covenant risk, which, you know, the ability of companies to continue to pay contributions into their pension schemes, that is an area where digitalization has the potential to reduce the lifespan of many of these sponsoring companies. So should we assume that covenant risk will behave in a linear way, or will it behave in a discontinuous way? This is an area where systems thinking, we believe, can help.
Yeah, no, so there's that sort of, I think it's a joke about bankruptcy, which is essentially, how did you go bankrupt? Very slowly at first, and then all in one go. So certainly, you know, the experience of people who have been through that as business leaders is not a linear, yes, we very, very slowly went bankrupt. You go bankrupt in a couple of weeks.
Yes.
Finally, I want to ask you, Ashok, how people can get involved in FinStick?
Well, FinStick is a member-driven initiative. So we really do want people to get involved. And the way to get involved is sign up, engage, contribute. And you can do this by, if you're aware of an interesting piece of systems work, an application, write a case study, support a blog. If you have something particularly of interest where you think a podcast would be maybe of interest, come and talk to us. We believe there are significant career opportunities for actuaries through getting involved in this. So please get involved. But most importantly, tell your friends.
Thank you to Ashok Gupta and Nico Aspinall. If you're interested in joining the FinStick community, reading case studies, listening to podcasts, or viewing systems thinking resources, visit www.actuaries.org.uk/FinStick. That's FINSTIC.